You might be wondering, like in a church setting, biblical conference, you know, why a session devoted to this subject? Why would we touch on this? Well, let me give you some reasons as we get going. Why would we talk about a biblical view of sex and include an hour for this? Well, because so many Christians are untaught in this area. Depending on where you grew up, what kind of church you grew up in, I was in a church, a good church, a good Bible teaching church, but all I ever heard about sex could be boiled down to marry a Christian, don't have sex before you get married, marry a Christian. Don't have sex before you get married, marry a Christian. Don't. Now, those two things I would advocate as well. That's good counsel. But it would have been nice if someone had told me more about. I was hearing a lot about sex, and I'm 51, so nothing like kids today would be hearing from the world. And I had all these questions, and I had all these misunderstandings, and I was piecing things together on my own. And my parents are good parents, but which I know I found that they're ahead of a lot of parents now that I've been a pastor, just by the fact that my dad sat me down one time. I have a twin brother, sat me down with my twin brother on a Saturday. I still remember because he had this little book called Now You're 12. And I remember thinking, but I'm not. I'm 11. Please stop. Please stop saying these things. I was just like, oh. And I was just thinking, you and Mom have done this once that I know of, because we're here. I'm just like, ah. And that was it. But that puts my dad ahead of a lot of people. I'm shocked at how many families in our church, my church, that they don't say a word to their kids. Zero. Not a word on this. Nothing. Or they wait so late. And I know there's competing views on this, and I'm not going to try to convince you of my view or my camp, that there's a lot of this, you know, keep them innocent, keep them innocent, keep them innocent. Unless you got your kids in a bubble somewhere, you need to start talking about this. And I don't know about you, but I want to be the one. I want to be the one to talk to my kids about this, and I'd like it to be a conversation, and I'd like it to be not a one and done. So let me recommend, I don't know if I put it in the notes or not, but let me say it before I forget, a series of books by Nav Press that are like Dave and Netta Jones, maybe it is, and it's a set of series of books to talk to your kids about sexual intimacy and what did God do, and each book, the first book starts off just very basic. I forget what the age is for, and it's basically just mommy has a baby in her tummy, you know, very tame. And then the next one gives a little more detail. Till the final book that I would sit down with my kids when they were like 14, 15, gets into contraception, gets into, you know, a young lady starting her period, gets into homosexuality. Each book goes a little further. But then I'm the dad sitting down having an ongoing. Now, I don't want you to think my kids love this. And they're like, oh, is it that time to have? They didn't want this either. They're just like, Dad, please, Dad, stop. And what they always said is, I know. And I'd say, you don't know. All right? I even took my son away. Oh, maybe he was 16. And I said, let's have a father-son time. Let's go away. We'll watch a fun guy movie at the theater. We'll go out to eat. Pick a hotel where we can swim in a pool. And I just wanted to one more time just sit down and talk through some of relationships and marriage and sex. And it did not go well. So I won't. The movie swim food part did. But I tried to be real casual. I just had a few notes in my lap and I tried to just glance and we're in two chairs and it could not have been more awkward. It was just like, wow, he's making this so difficult. He does not want me to talk to them about this. So it goes both ways. Our kids are awkward sometimes with us trying to talk about it. We're embarrassed ourselves talking about it. But listen to me. The church needs to talk about it in an appropriate way. So let me put you at ease. Maybe the reason no one's in here is there's not going to be any diagrams. We're not going to turn in groups and role play. You know, I'm not going to turn you in a group and say, now let's act this out. No. Just be at ease. It's just a lecture. No diagrams. No video clips. Just in an appropriate way. So at our church, I've been there 18 years, and people know, not because I'm trying to be weird, but because I think it, I want everything to just come across as God has something to say about the most important parts of life. So as a pastor, if I'm not talking about money, sometimes pastors are scared on that, I'm doing a disservice to my people. I need to talk about money more than just give us some. I'm not saying that. I'm always saying just give us money. But teach on money. Money's a huge part of our life. Our sexuality is a huge part of life. If we're silent on money, silent on sex, and silent on the most important things in life, we're not being a good church. So I regularly hit on this. Now, I try to send out an email and inform the whole church because, of course, I have some people that are like, we don't want to be there. We don't want our kids to be there. And I don't think I'm ever inappropriate. I'll tell you something a little funny, though. One time in the recent past that I was talking about sex in a very appropriate way, yet enthusiastic. I'm very enthusiastic about it. I think that would be good for the kids to think, like, our pastor, like, he likes this. He's into this. And so this woman came up to me the next Sunday, and she said, as we were driving home, my son in the back seat, I don't know what he was, 10, 9, 10, 11, I don't know. She said, I just glanced in the rearview mirror and said, Calvin, do you know what Pastor Brad was talking about today? And he said, no, but I know he really likes it. Said, okay, that's good. If that was his takeaway, you know, to put these two things together, it's like you can be godly, you can love the Lord, it's happening in the church, and it's good. It's good. So many Christians are untaught in this area. And because we need to talk about it, because so many Christians have unbiblical thinking and behavior in this area that's hurting their testimony and social relationships. We need to talk about it because we need to teach our children and grandchildren not only what is wrong sexually, but also what is right. Too often the church has been guilty of just saying what they don't want you to do. Don't have sex before marriage, and don't commit adultery, and don't get into pornography, and don't. And we don't realize, I don't think you realize how often, because of all the don'ts about it, a person forms an opinion, and many times it's females more than males, of, I guess this whole thing is just bad. It's bad. It's bad. Or it's something that we should just be tolerated. It wasn't God's first idea, or somehow it's like, oh, this is just something we should not have anything to do with. We need to talk about it also so that we can evaluate other popular teaching in light of scriptures. If we don't carefully and fully, in a robust way, know all that the scripture has to say about it, we won't have a grid by which we can evaluate everything else that's going on because, oh, there's a lot going on, right? In our culture and on talk shows and in movies, and it's everywhere. And I want to have a biblical grid with which I can think this through. I want my kids to have this biblical worldview framework that includes biblical worldview framework on sexuality. So I hope this doesn't make you embarrassed either, but like on masturbation. I wish my dad had said this, just used the word and explained to me what was going on. I just had to think to myself, what is this? And so with my boys, I approach them. I have Vicky talk to our girls, and I talk to the boys. But with the boys, before they ever said anything to me, when I thought they were of that age that I remember being, that I was discovering things, I just went to them and said, hey, have you realized and have you figured out yet? You know, if you touch your way in this certain way, these things happen and it feels really good, and they seem really sheepish and just kind of like, well, yeah. And I always tried to remain upbeat and not like, you're kidding, you've done that? Don't ever, you'll go blind. Don't ever, you know. I mean, that's kind of been the approach in the past. I mean, seriously, in the history, there's been points in church history where they were telling their kids, if you masturbate, you'll go blind. And, you know, well, that doesn't work. All you have to do is go ahead and cross the line once. And you're like, I still see. Hallelujah. That must not be true. I'll take a chance again. So I didn't want to go that approach. I just said, you know what? So I stayed upbeat and I said, you know what? You have discovered something wonderful that God created. All right, so I'm staying upbeat. But he created it to be used in the context of marriage with a husband and wife, where you think of the good of the other and you share this pleasure. And so I just said to them, you do not want to get in the habit before you're married of just doing this for yourself, by yourself, just to have a pleasure, just to get a buzz, just because I'm bored, just because I'm feeling down. I said, because it's very habit-forming, it's very pleasurable, but that's good. God is a good God. He meant it to be pleasurable, but he meant it to be shared in the context of marriage. Let me encourage you, don't do this. Resist. Resist the temptation. Because I told them, because when you get into a marriage and you are married, it won't automatically be, oh, I'm not tempted to do that anymore. I said, it will have repercussions on your marriage. Because it's easier to please yourself than to work it out with somebody else. So, and then I didn't just leave it alone. I've come back again at it at other points and just asked questions. So I want it to be just like I've regularly talked to my kids about money. You know, here's the deal on money. Here's the deal on bills. Here's how, And I let them know what's going on, the money that I give away, and how we, and I got them three jars, three peanut butter jars. One is save 50%, one is give to the church 10%, and one is you get to spend 40%. From the very beginning, I taught them this. One time I took my paycheck and went to the bank and got it all in ones and brought it home and plopped it in a pile on the dining room table on a Friday night when all the kids were young. And then I had our budget printed out and I handed it around and said, now you take the house payment out, Lauren. Now, Harrison, you do the electric bill. Now, because they were always, every time we drove, you know how kids are? Every time we drove past the bank, they're like, just get some money out of the bank. Why can't we go to Disney World? And why can't, don't we have a jet ski? And why don't we have a boat? And I was always saying, because we don't have the money. You got money. We know you have money. Right? So it was very interesting. Once we did electric bill, and then I'm of the opinion, this is how I've lived my life, you save so much for car repairs so you're ready when it breaks down. You save so much to buy your next used car. I let them see all that. We had this tiny, I don't know what it was. It was $650 left in the middle or what. And I said, there's play money. There's what. Now, I included haircut money for Vicky. I mean, there's other things. But I just wanted them to have a sense, more than just saying, that's real life. Why not do the same thing on sex? And I'm not saying invite the kids into the bedroom. Watch this, you know. But talk. Have a dialogue. I don't want them to catch us doing this any more than they want to see it, you know. It's like, no kid wants that. I'm not advocating that. Even when they rattle the door and it's locked, I can just hear them outside, oh, as they walk away, you know. Because once they're older, you got to lock the door, but and they're just always, I always tell them, don't. Why do you have to use my bathroom? It's a master bathroom. Why are your Q-tips in my bed? Just keep your stuff in your bathroom. Why do you have to come through here? But I hear it rattle, rattle. It's like, oh. You know, just the very fact that it's locked has grossed them out. They're just like, oh my goodness. So, it's part of life. It's a big part of life. God made it. It's good. I want them to have a sense of what God has to say about it, and I'd love for them to hear it from moi, from me. Okay? Sex, number one. Sex was created by God and is pure. Again, just like a lot of things, we have to be so careful. We live in a fallen, broken, twisted, perverted world. As a pastor for 28 years and a 51-year-old man, you don't need to convince me of how much damage has been done with sexual abuse, how much perversion is out there. But folks, we cannot throw the baby out with the bathwater. You've got to come back. And too often I find that there are people, Christians that love the Lord, that have not continued to hold on to because they've been hurt, because they've seen something horrible, because they've experienced something horrible. They've not held on to. God designed sex and it's pure. And it's good. It's from our Lord. Good, good. A verse that points this out besides Genesis is 1 Timothy 4:4. For everything God created is good, and nothing is to be rejected, but all is to be received with prayer of thanks. Let me ask you, did God create sex or Hollywood? God. This was not an add-on. This was not an upgrade. Like God created human beings, and then at some point, centuries into it, human beings came up with sex. No, it was part of the package. God. And if God created it, what does the verse say our attitude should be about it if God created it? Three things we can learn about sex from 1 Timothy 4:4. It's good. It's good. It's good. Number two, it should not be rejected, but accepted. Receive it. It's good, it's not to be rejected, and you can thank God for it. Now, you do not have to thank God for sexual abuse. You do not have to thank God for any hurtful, twisted, scary version of sex that's happened to you in your past. But as Pastor Viers was talking this last hour, you need to get some buckets in your own thinking and make some distinctions between what has been sinfully done in your past and still choose to maintain what is true that God gave us, that sex in itself is not bad. It is not to be rejected. It's good, it's to be received, and you can thank God for it. See, God designed both the male and female anatomy. God designed both male and female anatomy. It's not something to be ashamed of or embarrassed about or awkward about, and yet it's appropriate that we wear clothing. I'm not advocating anything different. I want to run naked in my home with my wife, but not other places. I'm not that kind of person yet. Vicky has this great fear. Are you just going to want to do this wherever? No, honey, with you. We're running as husband and wife here. It's like, chase me, girl, chase me. Come on. She just, I don't know, maybe one day, someday. Got to run by myself through the house. Pretend she's chasing. God's first command to Adam and Eve was impossible to fulfill without sex. You know that? Be fruitful and multiply. Right from the get-go, one of his first commands could not be accomplished apart from sex. And sex in marriage is God's idea and is good. In fact, you know what? God gives us clear instructions in Proverbs 5. If you want to jot down some of the key passages in your Bible that guide us on sexual relations, Proverbs 5, 1 Corinthians 7, the whole book, you tell me, what entire book of the Bible presents a picture of the sexual intimacy relationship of husband and wife? Song of Solomon. Is there good allegory that can be applied to the church and us and Jesus and metaphor? Sure, but too often I'm amazed how people think that's the only thing being said. In context, literally, we don't need to shy away from or back off on. It's extolling the beauty and the wonder and the delight of sexual relations between husband and wife. That is the Song of Solomon. And you think about how many things we wish, I know I do, I think maybe you'd be the same way, I wish I had more information on in the Bible. Like I do wish there was more specific verses on parenting teenagers and young adults and when do they leave the home and when do they not, how much should I keep helping and not. But here's an area, sexuality, where we don't have an entire book on parenting. We don't have an entire book on money. We have an entire book on the sexual relationship between husband and wife. And I think it's interesting that it's set in the context. What kind of genre is it? What kind of genre is the Book of Song of Solomon? Poetry. Because there's a beauty there. There's a wonder there. It's a love song. It's a story. As Pastor Virus was saying, don't be guilty as a biblical counselor. Listen, it's easy to step into this trap, and I did it the first decade of biblical counseling. And now, by God's grace, I'm thinking differently. Don't be guilty of just being a New Testament biblical counselor that knows all those pithy little do not, do this, do that, Ephesians and Colossians. Be someone who knows the book of Ruth and can give. The reason the Bible has actually, think about it, more narrative than didactic is God knows us. We learn well by story. It's wonderful to see other people and put yourself in that story and you get it. You need to know all of your Bible. And Song of Solomon, I very often assign a couple who's struggling here to read the Song of Solomon. And it is a little confusing. A lot of times I say, I don't know who's talking. It doesn't matter. Just read it. Just read it. Who's saying what right here? Who? Yes, I know. It's poetry. It's poetry. But God intended us to get, just kind of catch that it's good. It's delightful. There is a sense of, wow, look at this. They're excited about each other. Long before Alex Comfort wrote the best-selling Joy of Sex, that I don't advocate, there's better Christian biblical counseling books than that, there was the Song of Solomon. God beat Alex Comfort to the punch. It's not like we knew nothing until Alex Comfort wrote his best-selling book, The Joy of Sex. You see the joy of sex in the Song of Solomon. God designed it. God owns it. It's not toned down either. Song of Solomon, there may be confusing places like who's talking, but there's some other places that are not confusing at all. It's like, wow, cool. To the point that, get this, the Jews did not allow their children to read the Song of Solomon until they were 12. Some of you may skip lunch and go read Song of Solomon, huh? Because it's racy, you know? I'm going to climb my palm tree and lay hold of its fruit. I'll let you consider what that's about. It's like, all righty, yeah. So I'm not the first one that kind of thought, that would be wonderful. It's like, it's right there. Song of Solomon. In fact, the book freaked out a lot of our early church fathers who didn't know what to do with it. So a lot of the early church interpreters have done horrible things with Song of Solomon, just allegorized it to death and missed. To say that they missed the main thing is just like an overstatement. It's like, wow, they just missed it. Bernard of Clairvaux preached 86 sermons on this book without ever mentioning the sexual relationship between husband and wife. 86 sermons. It's God's idea. It has been from the very beginning, right from the beginning in the book of Genesis with the first man and woman, Adam and Eve. Because think about this, folks. Adam and Eve didn't just stumble onto this, right? They didn't just come out of the bushes one day saying, "Oh, whoo, God, you'll never believe what we figured out. That was amazing." No, God intended this. He intended this. It was his idea. It was his design. Genesis 2, 22 to 25. "Then God made a woman and brought her to man." "This is it," Adam exclaimed. It's very interesting. If you read the Genesis account, I think it's intentional. God designed it on purpose that he wanted Adam to name all the animals, to see all the creatures before he showed him Eve. So he'd realize, man, you know, as I think about it, as an anteater went by, I don't think so. No, I'm not feeling it. You know, giraffe, no. I don't like women bigger than me. You know, just animal after animal after animal. Oh, there's a strong smell there. I don't think so. Scary. And then, imagine seeing Eve. You haven't seen anything like Eve. Is it any wonder that he said, "This is it"? And men have been feeling that way ever since. And it's good. It's good. Are there perversions on all that? Yes. But ladies, you don't need to be ashamed. While I want you to be modest, and I've preached strong messages about modesty, I don't ever want you to be ashamed of being a woman. And the aura and the mystery and the draw, God made you that way. There is a wonder to a woman. A wonder. A wonder. A wonder. That I don't want you to tone down. Enhance it. Accent it in a biblical way. Don't flaunt it. Don't use it to manipulate. Don't use it to seduce. But never be ashamed of being a woman. It is glorious. It is delightful. I don't want you to think I want to be one. I'm not. I'm not saving my money for a sex change or anything. I'm just saying, I'm a man, and I love that there are women. 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 I delight in my wife. Just... And not just sexually, it's not just like all I want to do is have sex. I actually want to go for walks there. I actually enjoy talking to her there. There have actually been times that she said, "Hey, baby, you." I said, "No, I'm fine." How about that? You never thought that would ever happen, would you? This is not all I want. I delight in Vicky. And part of that is sexuality and delighting in that and enjoying her physically. But that's not all there is to it, by any means. God invented sex. Not Hugh Hefner with Playboy magazine. Not Larry Flint with Hustler magazine. Not the sickos that design pornography websites. God. So let's make a distinction. And you need to keep in mind, the very best things that God has ever done, why should it surprise us that those are the things that Satan has gone after the most to pervert and twist, right? So let's not give up and give surrender ground over to Satan. Let's take it back. In the best way, I want to take it back, just like I continue to defend and proclaim that marriage is good. Is it hard? But most things that are good and worth having and doing, they are hard. But it's one of the best things I've ever done. Has sex been perverted and does the world go after it? And has Satan chosen it to be one of his main vehicles and means by which he just hurts so many people and confuses? Yes, but it's good. Let's take back surrendered ground and say, this belongs to the church. This is our God thought of this, and it shouldn't be, well, what does the church have to say about sex? Well, get out of here. You just talk about heaven and hell and eternal things and salvation and Jesus and all your little Bible stories. This is our area. No, it's not. Say amen. No, it's not. God created sex, get this, before there was sin. God created sex before there was sin. So don't put it post-fall as a part of, well, I guess it's just a stopgap measure. Now that they're sinners, they're going to do this thing like, ah. And every time they do it, God would just say, oh, that's so embarrassing. There they are again. I never meant for that to happen, but now that they're sinners and they've got lust, go ahead and satisfy it like that, but be quick about it and don't really get into it, you know? And he pushes the angels away from the edge of the head. Don't look. Don't just. You're going to be tainted. You're not going to understand this, and I wish it had never happened anyway. Right? That's how we act sometimes. At best, you know, it's just like, well, if you have to, all right, it's your birthday. You know? It's like, That's not God's attitude, and it should not be our attitude. He created sex before there was sin. It's not a part of the fall. And even after sin and the fall of man in Genesis 3, God still calls sex good and honorable. So it was good when he created it before the fall. News alert, he still calls it good. Look at Hebrews chapter 13, verse 4. Let marriage be held in honor among all, and let the marriage bed be undefiled. That's a euphemism. Excuse me, by the way. Marriage bed's just a euphemism for sexual relations. And sexual relations undefiled, for God will judge the adulterer and all the sexually immoral. So right there we get his harsh and understandably direct comment about perversions of it. But right in the context, he's saying, this is good. Marriage is honorable and the bed undefiled. This is a good thing. I'm not embarrassed when this happened. I designed this. I meant for this to happen. I gave you this. I'm a good God. Here's the other thing I think that where we get off base. God is good. And he's a God that thought of pleasure. I hope this doesn't embarrass you, but you think about it. Procreation could have taken place like nanu nanu. You know, we just touch index fingers. Like we're eating breakfast, we're taking the kids to soccer. You think we want to have another baby? Yeah, let's do it. Nanu nanu. We just touch index fingers. Right? It didn't have to be pleasurable. He didn't have to be put pleasurable sensory nerves in each reproductive organ area. I'll spare it. No, I'm not going to pull out a chart, but there's reasons that, and God thought of that. Pleasurable. So it's not wrong that you think, well, I don't know, should I be enjoying this like this? Not wrong. God could have had it any number of other ways that we would have children. And by the way, where the Catholic Church missed it for years, it's not just for procreation. So it's not like, unless you're doing this to have a child, you shouldn't be doing this. No. He designed it for pleasure. Great little book, and it's a little book, and I have used it so many times with people that are struggling, and they have come back and said, many young ladies especially have said, wow, that really helped me. Dr. Bob Smith's little book, Biblical Principles of Sex. He's been on staff at Faith, where Pastor Vires is, forever, and he's a medical doctor and a biblical counselor, and the book's short, and it's not embarrassing. There's nothing, I mean, he's in his 80s. It's not racy. So, but it really does a nice job showing all the biblical verses, showing God designed this. This is good. Here's the deal. I use it quite a bit. So consider that as a good resource. So what are the key biblical principles? What's another one we need to think of in terms of sexuality? What should we have in mind? Well, number two, marriage is intended to depict the sexual relationship as an expression of intense companionship and intimacy. A marriage, get this, we know this from Ephesians 5, the last verse that many people don't make it all the way to. Marriage is meant to typify the believer's relationship with Christ. Did you know that? You know, Paul's talking about husbands love your wives, wives submit to your husbands, respect them, lay down your life. And then he says, I tell you a mystery. I speak of a mystery. And then in that final verse, he says, I'm talking about Christ and the church. This marriage that I know seems so earthy and gritty and less than perfect and confusing and disillusioning at times, even in its frailty, with its faults, under a sin-cursed world, God still says, I intended beyond just companionship and beyond just procreation to use marriage as a billboard and a picture of Christ and the church. There's something bigger going on in a marriage. That's one of the things that I try to press on my counselees. When they're both digging in their heels, when they're both refusing to change, when they're both refusing to forgive, many times we're guilty of just turning to making appeals like this, but consider the kids. This is going to be another broken home for your kids. And I do some of that. There's times that I just weep. I can tell I am more concerned than they are. I'm thinking, you got kids. But I'll tell you something we don't often refer to that we should, but I do. There's something bigger going on than your list of hurts and your list of hurts, sir, and what you think is right and what you think is right, and what you think you deserve and what you think you deserve, and how you've been hurt and how you've been hurt. Help them to understand you are just trampling across, splattering, and saying, I don't care about when you stood and said, I do. You entered into I'm supposed to put on display to a hurting, confused, disillusioned, caustic, sarcastic, cynical world the love of Christ and his church. That's what you're trampling across as well when you say, we're done with this marriage. And I'm dealing almost always with Christians, professing Christians that are usually in my church or some other church. Marriage. And so the sexual relationship is a part of that. Ephesians 5, 31 and 32. For this reason, a man will leave his father and mother, be united to his wife, and the two will become one flesh. Look at it. This is a profound mystery. But I am talking about Christ and the church. One of the biggest breakthroughs for me in our marriage is when I stopped thinking just in terms of what do I wish Vicki was more like, and how would I like to run our home, and how organized would I like it to be, and I want the drawers shut, and I'd like the keys hanging on the little hook, you know, which is the way to live. No. When I began to think, I'm supposed to be Jesus. I'm not supposed to be thinking there's Tinker Toys everywhere, the pillows aren't in the corners of the couch, the shoes at the landing, you know, there's clutter on the counter, there's old mail, throw away old mail, please. I'm supposed to be Jesus. There's something bigger going on here. I've lost sight of something when I got a hold of the something bigger. And that I'm going to be held accountable, guys, to the something bigger. It changed how I love and lead Vicki. And the same way with you, ladies. When you get a hold of the something bigger that I'm supposed to put on display, how the church responds to Christ, the bride of Christ. It's not just this marriage and what I want and what he wants, my agenda versus his agenda. There's something bigger, profound mystery. Rob Bell, who I certainly would not agree with most anything he says, he's gotten worse and worse. But on this, I think he gets it right. When he drives this point home, he says, this marriage between a man and woman is about something much bigger than relationship itself. Oh, it is. I wish more Christians could grasp that. Much bigger. It points beyond them to somebody else, to God. The point of marriage isn't marriage. Oh, it's a picture, a display, a window that you look through to something else. A marriage has a mission. Too often the problem is that each person in that marriage has a mission and it has nothing to do with God's mission. Our world isn't one. It's broken, shattered, fractured, with pieces lying over the floor. A marriage is designed to counter all of this, not to add to the brokenness of the world, but to add to the oneness of the world. This man and this woman who have given themselves to each other are supposed to give the world a glimpse of hope, a display of what God is like, a bit of oneness on earth. That's the mystery that Paul's talking about. Will you do this perfectly? No. But I'm telling you what, I've been a pastor 28 years. I've been at the church where I am 18 years. And I could count for you on my two hands the couples in my church that have a relationship like he's talking about. Is it perfect? No. But you can tell they delight in each other. You can tell there's something special going on there and you're drawn to it. I'm drawn to people like that in Walmart, in restaurants. I'll go up to them and say, it is so encouraging to see how, I don't even have to even hear words, which I usually can't because I have a serious hearing loss. But I can just watch the countenance of their face and how they're relating over that meal in a restaurant because it's so rare. So often as I look around, there's just stoic, cold. Very often, here's the deal. She's looking down, checking her phone. He's looking down, checking his phone, and everyone's just chewing. And when you see people engaged and delighting in each other, even if you can't hear the words, you're drawn to it. You're encouraged. It's like, ah, yes, yes. The marriage bond and the believer's union with Christ interact in ways that influence or enrich our understanding of both. The marriage bond and the believer's union with Christ interact in ways that influence or enrich our understanding of both. Let me just press that a little bit and tell you what I think I'm trying to say here. And I think it would help some of you, and even on this area of sex in your marriage. Marriage was never designed to fully satisfy you. That would help some of you if you got a hold of that. We live in a culture that so much just thinks if something isn't all that you want it to be, someone should fix this. What do we still yet need to do? What's the secret? What's the formula? What? Now, don't hear me saying there's not a place for, if it's awful, get help. If it's blasé, get help. But that still is not the same thing as saying, still, what yet isn't just like you wish it was. What yet it should just be tweaked. And we have this, that many times causes us to miss out on and enjoying what we have. And your spouse does not feel accepted and at ease to rest in your presence. They feel like a project. They feel like they always come up short. And so there just isn't this. And so in the sexual area, certainly as well. It's like anyone who's married, I'm sure, would love to have great sex. But it's just not going to be off the charts great sex all the time, every time. But too often when it is, you're just like, why can't it be like that always? Think about our meals. I mean, there's meals that are like, all right, that's food. That's probably going to keep me alive. And there's other meals that's like, oh my goodness, roasted asparagus, not overly roasted, with sea salt and some olive oil and then squeeze fresh lime on there. Oh dear me, so good, so good. And a steak that's cooked just right. There's this place near us, a little meat market, Finky and Sons. So good. I get the ribeye, about that thick. Every meal's not going to be that way. And every sexual encounter isn't going to be that way. And part of it also that would greatly help is if you went into each encounter thinking, I just want to enjoy my spouse. We get to experience closeness. There's more than orgasm going on here. Closeness. And just the touch of each other, and I want to please her, or I'd like to please him. And oh, by the way, many times for me, and I don't think it's just my wife, what pleases her more than anything else is a back rub. There's other things other than just intense sexuality. You're there to please each other. But when you come in with kind of a report card attitude and the sense that this is a lab test and we've got things plugged in to decide just how far this thing peaks, you set yourself up for disaster, right? You just got the expectation set so high. You're just, bring it down. Bring it down. And when it is good, and there are many, and by the way, Vicky's not here. I mean, I assure you. She's like, I am not going to be there. So I want you to know, if you think this is awkward, she does too. And even when I'm preaching, you know, she's in the front row, but she's like, oh, honey, every time you mention breasts, I just feel like, oh, they're all looking at me. So she's not in this room, and she doesn't want to be. I don't even know what I was saying now. I don't know. Must not have been that important. But when you just bring down the expectation some and just say, we just want to enjoy each other, it helps so much. And that, by the way, is why I press on my boys. Do not say, oh, masturbation is God's gift to the single man. Oh, that is not God's gift to the single man. If you get used to pleasing yourself and you get it just how you want and you know, I mean, you're touching yourself, right? And then you expect it to happen that well with someone else, or pornography, which are less than real women, women that have been airbrushed in ways that your wife could never live up to this, nor should she. You're setting, so that's part of the problem. We're coming in to the marriage bed from a culture that is so set it so high, and guys have already been dabbling in areas they shouldn't be dabbling that are going to put so much pressure on the wife in the marriage bed. I say to guys, don't do it for that very reason, so that you can enjoy the wife you do end up having. Sexual expression is to be at the end of the intimacy chain, the product of a manifestation of real marital oneness. Never should a marriage just boil down to sex. It's the end of the intimacy chain. And there needs to be conversation. There ought to be shared in projects and enjoyment and relating. But I do want to say this, though, ladies, and all men, all God's men will thank me. There are two favorite ways that we relate. Now, I know I'm stereotyping a little bit, but in general, I found this to be true. There are exceptions. But I'll say to people sometimes, women typically want a good conversation, right? Let's just really have a good heart-to-heart talk. How long does that take? In my home, that takes at least, you know, 20, 25, 30 minutes. And if we walk around the block, that's a mile. I don't mind. Sitting on our front porch swing, I do not mind. Patio, I do not mind. Sex, I hope this doesn't embarrass you if you're single.
It doesn't take that long, usually. I mean, I'd love for it to be some just drawn-out cruise and banquet and just on and on and on. It's not, though. You know, it's rarely that. It's pretty quick, and yet I find women are like, oh, I'm tired. Oh, it's just so invasive. He's all over me. It's just like, hey, we're going for long walks. Now, if you're not men, then you can't do this, but I'm going for walks. I'm standing in the department store for hours as you come out. Yeah, that's nice. No, you don't look big in that. I mean, the stuff I'm doing with her takes a lot longer. I'm tired standing there. I'm tired of swinging. I'm tired of walking. And I'm tired of hearing that you're tired for sex. It's like 8 minutes tops, you know, maybe depending on, you know. Every now and then I'm like, could we make this last a little longer? But in general, it's like, we're in, we're out. It's like, how hard is this? And yet it's set up as just like, oh, golly gee, I'm just so... Think about it. You know? There's different ways we relate that are our favorite ways. And yet, for guys, I feel like too often conversation is treated as like, that's humane and mature and godly, but he wants sex. It's just so crass and base and animalistic. It is not. And I've said to Vicky, and I'll say it to you all, and maybe guys would agree, good sex with Vicky is one of the biggest things that makes me feel close to her and makes me want to treasure her, dote on her, run open the door for her. I'm not saying it's a you do this and then it just happens. It wells up, and when I feel, there's more than anything else that happens, I feel like a man. I'm her man. And she wants me. So here I would also say, don't just lay there. All right, have your way. Let me know when you're done. Timer's running. Oh, that's just wonderful. We want you to get into it. I don't mean like hanging upside down from the ceiling, but get into it. Cheer me on. Say something. I don't want to go too far, but don't just make this like just, all right. What do you like it when your husband just hits the remote, turns the TV off and says, fine, talk. How special is that to you? Huh? And he's talking. He's there. He's available now. But you know, he doesn't want to be. He wants to watch the game. That's how we feel when you just make yourself available. I never told him no. We don't want just no. We don't want you to say no. We want you to say, yeah, yes, bring it, big guy. You know? I'm just trying to help you out here. All right. C.J. Mahaney has an excellent little book, guys. It's little, called Sex, Romance, and the Glory of God. Fantastic. And then, ladies, there is a chapter in the back by his wife, Carolyn, that talks straight to ladies who struggle, maybe perchance in certain areas of this. It's great from Carolyn for you to hear a woman talk to you about this. And then CJ does a great job. The main thing he keeps coming back to over and over in the book, and guys, we do need to get this, and we're not good about this. Before you touch her body, touch her heart. Before you touch her body, touch her heart. But ladies, don't use that as a club that you decide how much is enough. Like, well, I just feel like we haven't been relating that much. You really haven't been. Again, it's just like never enough before you can touch your body. And I would say this to you also, if you're here and you're married, you're a wife. If he's coming after you, thank God he's coming after you. When a Christian man says yes to Jesus Christ, unlike all the other men in this culture, at that moment, we also made a covenant with the Lord. From that point forward, there is only one place that I can go to satisfy this sexual urge and delight and pleasure that I want. It's you. And when you say no, I have nowhere to turn. Biblically. And yet there's the computer. Free download porn. I'm not trying to lay on guilt, folks, because I know I've dealt with plenty of men who are having good sex with their wives and they still go off and commit adultery. So do not hear me saying, if you'll just have sex with your husband, he'll never stray. I'm not saying that. But I am saying, when you're getting good meals at home, when I'm eating good food at home, I'm talking about real food now. I'm going to switch over here in a minute. I am not attracted to Burger King and all that. I'm not a fan of fast food because Vicky fixes good stuff. There's no comparison. I tell Vicky, not out of guilt, but I just want to encourage her, and I thank her. I can be at the gym, on the treadmill, LA Fitness, women running around in tight little stuff on a machine right in front of me, and I choose to look up. I mean, I have to do this. I got a crick in my neck by the time I'm done, because her bottom's right there, and she's doing this right here in front of me. I look away, but I'm telling you what, when I am sexually satisfied, and I've just had a fabulous romp in the bed with my own wife, it is so much easier. It's just like, whatever. I don't need that. I don't need that. And even when I do struggle, I just immediately say to me, there's no ultimate pleasure in that. God, thank you for my wife. Thank you for the great sex that we have. Thank you for what you've given me. What you've given me is so much better, with no toxicity, no fallout, no guilt, no shame. God, thank you for what we have. But if I was one of those guys, and I'm finding that there's so many of them, ladies, who are saying, we never have sex. It's like, oh, we've gone. I meet with people, and it's like, it's been 2 years since we've had sex. You are kidding me. Or it's just so rare that we ever have sex. Not good. Not good. Sex without marital intimacy can take many forms. Sex without marital intimacy can take many forms. Just raw lust, masturbation I've touched on. Which, by the way, if you want something on this, I think on my website, I have a website, bradbigney.com. I have an article on masturbation that I wrote. Sometimes people ask me, well, how would you build a case that this is wrong? You know, the Bible doesn't use the word masturbation. How did you talk to your sons? How would you approach this? I have an article, so that's free if you want to download that. Josh Harris, by the way, in his book, Sex is Not the Problem, Lust Is, has a great chapter on masturbation in that book. Sex is Not the Problem, Lust Is. Homosexuality is just another twisted perversion of something good that God designed. Adultery, twisted outside of God's natural boundaries. Fornication, same way. You know, so often singles will say, well, if it's good, and here's what I hear so often, and we're getting married anyway. Here's my answer. Feel free to use this. Shut up. Okay. And let me tell you this. We're getting married anyway, people. I can't tell you how many times I've sat with a couple who's 7 years into their marriage, all screwed up on their sexual relationship. It's not going well. And as I begin to ask questions, I find out they were having sex before they were married, and it has screwed her up. Because every time she did it, she felt guilty. News alert! You associate sex with guilt, and you'll drag it into your marriage bedroom where you're supposed to be free, but she can't be free because she did it so many times with you with this echoing in her head, I shouldn't be doing, while you were saying, it's okay, honey, because we're getting married anyway, or maybe she's the one that wanted to, I don't know. Don't. God knows best. He's not a bad God. It's not like, what a downer. No, no. And I know I may be one of the last people on the planet that didn't have sex before they were married. But it causes me to say to you, you can do this. I was a virgin. Not a 40-year-old virgin, but a virgin. And was it easy? Oh, no. It was very hard. But I'm so glad Vicky's the only person I've ever had sex with. I have no one else to compare to. That's kind of nice, too, right? Now, I know if you're already here and you've already blown it, I don't want you to just go crawling out. But I do want you to do this. Too often people decide, well, we've already blown it. I've had sex before. You know what? There is still a healthy, marvelous, God-blessing thing you can do. You draw a line in the sand and say, from this point forward, no more. You say, well, what's the point? Great point. You get God's blessing, His grace, His favor. You don't want to just keep going down this path because you've already blown it. Confess your sin to God. Declare to one another no more. Ask to be held accountable. Decide you're not going to go to each other's homes or apartment alone. Decide you're not going to lie on your side while you watch a movie. You can decide you're not going to spoon. There's all kinds of things you can decide. When I meet with couples that I'm doing pre-engagement counseling, I think that, well, I was going to say they freak out, but now news has spread through the church, so they usually come ready, that I'm going to ask direct, bold questions. Are you having sex? Are you sleeping together right now? Are you having sex? That doesn't so much freak him out because he's going to ask you that. Everyone says he's going to ask you that. But then I go on to say, are you touching each other? Are you touching her breast? Are you touching his penis? They're like, oh, my word. Because I'll tell them, don't be a legalist. Like, you know, people want to say, well, technically, we've not had sexual intercourse. But we've done everything else in the world. And I'll tell them, the goal is sexual purity and honoring one another. And I'll tell them, until you are married, you're to treat her like a sister in the Lord. And I'll say, I don't want to be a legalist. I don't have a Bible verse that says, well, how far is too far? Can we kiss? I'm not going to answer that for you. Can we hold hands? I'm just going to tell you, you decide what you can do that you think would best preserve his purity and her purity. And I'll look at them and say, until you're married, and this kind of freaks them out, you're potentially spending time with someone else's spouse. How would you like for someone else to be spending time with your spouse right now? What would you want them to be doing and not doing? You do that. Does that make sense? Until you're married, all kinds of stuff happens before the altar. You don't know for sure you're getting married. And you want to please God, who says this is for the marriage bed. Not the we're on our way to marriage bed. The marriage bed, period. Another great book for guys. Ladies, don't even think about reading it. It would offend you so much. But you would be glad. I'm not saying he's derogatory towards women. He's just hard-hitting, and he's very direct, and he uses colorful language, but it works with men. And it's a chapter on adultery, a chapter on pornography, a chapter on masturbation. It's one of my favorite books, Fidelity. And the cover is very misleading. I know that looks just like, oh, what? That's not going to relate to today. Oh, it relates to today. Doug Wilson, Fidelity, is one of the best guy books to read on sexuality. What's another key biblical principle? God encourages the pleasure of sex in marriage. I thumped that a little bit already, but you got to get this. Pleasure is not wrong. Pleasure is not sinful in the context of how God designed it. We don't need to be freaked out about that. Proverbs 5:18 is the perfect example. Rejoice in the wife of your youth as a loving hind and a graceful doe. Let her breast satisfy you at all times. Be exhilarated with her love. Now, you don't have to be a linguistic specialist on Hebrew to figure out, don't you hear a lot of zeal and enthusiasm, not just like get married, have sex, nanu nanu. No, this is like, wow, it's okay to think, let her breast satisfy, be exhilarated with her love. Ladies, it's hard to be exhilarated with someone's love who won't hardly let you see them, be with them in that context. Now, I know, don't think I don't know this, if you've got sexual problems and an awkwardness and an unwillingness and lack of desire to be sexual with your spouse, there's almost always other problems in your marriage. Sex is rarely the problem. Sex is where the garbage shows up. When I find a couple that is not sexually, I'm not saying off the chart, but they're just not in a healthy way active there, there's other problems. Sex is one of the first casualties in a marriage that has problems that are not being addressed, because those problems affect the bedroom. Okay? So I don't have a problem with you saying, well, let's trace back and figure out. But I would say to you, figure out, get help if you need to, go to a counselor, talk to a good godly woman or a good godly couple in your church, but figure out why you don't want to be with each other like this. If it's hurt and unforgiveness, if it's whatever it is, sort it out. But you do not want to continue to live as a couple with little or no sexual activity. God did not intend that. This is the glue. This is one of the glues that's supposed to hold you together. And notice one of the words there that jumps out, not breast, wife. He doesn't say be satisfied with the breast of your, you know, girlfriend or your wife, 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 wife. Now look at this, C.S. Lewis, and talking about how we shouldn't be afraid of pleasure, that it's pleasurable. And sometimes the church and Christianity are pitted as we're very Victorian and we're prudes and we're, no, no, no. I know some muddle-headed Christians have talked as if Christianity thought that sex or the body or pleasure were bad in themselves, but they were wrong. Christianity is almost the only one of the great religions which thoroughly approves of the body, which believes that matter is good, that God himself once took on a human body, and that some kind of body is going to be given to us again. Even in heaven is going to be an essential part of our happiness, our beauty, and our energy. Christianity has glorified marriage more than any other religion, and nearly all the greatest love poetry in the world has been produced by Christians. If anyone says that sex in itself is bad, Christianity contradicts him at once. And look at some of the words there in Proverbs 5. Satisfy, means to have a thirst quenched. Exhilarated means to be, the word in the Hebrew means to be intoxicated, ravished, overwhelmed. So again, I'm coming back to the get it done, big guy. Let me know when you're done. Proverbs 5 gives us no indication that's how this is supposed to be happening. Intoxicated, ravished. Again, there's two ditches to fall into. The one ditch is I'm not saying you have to get whips and leather and all kinds of kinky stuff. I'm saying enthusiasm. A sense that even if you're tired, I know Vicky does this sometimes, because sometimes I hear it under her breath. She's like, Lord of the heavens, help me. You know, I reach over and touch her. Ask God for help. Just like with the kids sometimes, you think, Lord, help me. I'm exhausted today, and here's a mess. Someone just threw up. He reaches over and touches me. I'm sure you just tense up thinking, oh, Lord, not tonight. Yes, tonight. That doesn't mean that I am so insensitive that I demand sex on demand, always, any... No. You know, I try to be semi-sensitive to begin with and think, how does it seem things are going? And I've learned giving a heads up really helps, you know? So not anymore. Earlier in our marriage, it was more like, it's just like, oh, help us. You know, now I've learned, you know, early I'll just say something. Tonight, something real subtle, like tonight I'd really like to have sex. Aggressive, romping sex. And that's all. And then I go about yard work and I help clean the kitchen. But she knows. She can just kind of get her head around that. Romping sex is coming. And she's told me that helps. You know, just, I wish I knew. Now, earlier in our marriage, I was like, I don't know what else I need to say. Just go ahead and know, always, anytime, I would like. Now, I must say, now that I'm 51, some of that's died down. I'm still a man. I still like it, but it is kind of nice. I just don't feel like this just, oh! I mean, from like 13 on, I was just like, what happened to me? And I have a twin brother, and we'd say to each other, like, are you just like, and he said, yes, like, me too. I'm just like, oh! And I don't think ladies understand that. My whole life of marry a Christian, don't have sex, I assumed that girls were the same way, just they could barely contain themselves. And then we got married, like, she has not thought her whole life about having sex every day. I was shocked. I just thought, this we can do this now. So why not do it every day, multiple times a day? Why would you not? We're allowed. It was just a real confusing point for both of us. Sex, number 5. I got to hurry. Sex in marriage is to be a major factor in preventing immorality. Again, I said it, but let me say it again. I'm not saying if you have healthy biblical sex, it's a guarantee, money-back guarantee, that your husband or your wife won't drift off somewhere else. But folks, there's a greater chance. And there's a much greater chance if someone is being starved sexually. But listen, if a guy goes off and does something terrible, even if his wife was not having sex with him, I still hold him accountable. I don't want you to think I've ever sat with anybody and said, ma'am, that was your fault. We lay that at your feet. I've never done that. His sin is his sin. But my heart does break a little bit when, as I spend time with the two of them and he's committed adultery with some secretary that kept telling him how great he was, and I get to know her and she's called me Mara. She's bitter. And she's just such a Debbie Downer. It's like, good grief. And she doesn't want to have sex at all. You know, that's pretty hard. But if they have not self-control, in 1 Corinthians 7 it says, restraint of their passions, they should marry. For it's better to marry than to be aflame with passion and tortured continually with undignified desires. The husband and wife are to satisfy each other, that there's no desire for anyone else to help quench. Just like when you drunk a big glass of water, you're not as thirsty for other things. When you've eaten a good meal, I mean, we've learned, we love to go to Destin for vacation, all the family, and we eat a good meal before we go to Walmart to buy all our groceries for the week. Why? I save money, lots of money. When we just get there, it's a 4-hour drive, and we get there, we go straight to Walmart. I've learned, we're just grabbing stuff off the shelf, Twinkies and beef jerky, and just, oh, we have all this food left, and we bought way too much junk food and way too many different ice creams. And this year, we ate and went. It was $235 cheaper than last year. Sex is very similar. In the home, I'm serious. Get satisfied in the home. And it's a tremendous, tremendous help in resisting the temptations outside of the home. I'll let you read the quote by Gary Thomas in your notes yourself for the sake of time. Number six, each husband and wife has a God-given duty to satisfy his or her mate. Woo! I know some of you aren't going to want to hear this, but just like some other things where you're commanded to give a portion of your money to God's work and kingdom, just like places where God commands us, he commands you to satisfy each other sexually. I don't think everybody keeps this in mind. It's almost just like, if I don't want to do it, I don't want to do it. And it's my body. No. Again, I'm not saying, women, you're his sex slave on demand. He just barks whenever he... No. We're to live with our wives in an understanding way, especially when they have young kids, especially if your wife works outside the home and you're both working full day's work. So, you know, there's balance here. If you're just coming home, guys, sitting in your chair, barking for a cold beverage and the head of something on a plate, you don't help clean up the kitchen, you don't help with anything. And then later that night, after she's bathed all the kids, cooked, cleaned the kitchen, she's thrown a load of laundry downstairs, and she staggers into the bedroom. You're finishing up watching the game on the TV in the bedroom. You say, hey, baby, how about you and me? And she looks at you like you're an idiot. It's because you are an idiot. Okay? So I'm not saying manipulation, like you run do a load of laundry so that later you can say, hey, I did laundry, so give me your body. But just serving each other, helping each other, being a team. And then ladies, even when you don't feel like it, saying, God, help me in this moment to give myself. This is right. This is honoring to you. This is my husband. I'm glad he's coming to me and not the next door neighbor or the woman at church. The woman at church. That happens too. I was going to say woman at work. The key phrase is translated, fulfill his duty. You're to fulfill your duty. It's like God's called us to please each other here. God's commandments, and God's commandments assume God's enabling. He will not ask you to do something you can't do. And I would say something else. Very often I hear from ladies, I know the desire is different. Sometimes there's exceptions. I've got cases where there's been guys that didn't want to have sex and the ladies want it. But after 28 years, I can count those on my hand. There's a different level of a desire, I know. But too often I hear from the ladies, that's all he wants. It would be nonsense. I'd never have my clothes on if I did this as much as he wanted. But you know what I've found? When you make it a big deal and you resist, it's like we feel like we want it, we want it, we want it. I'll tell them, find out. Find out. There really is a limit. And you say, he would never. Have you ever tried it? Just, I'm going to respond, or we're going to have sex every time he wants it. I tell you what, there are perverted exceptions. I have found in every case, she comes back and says, you're right. I know it's true with me and Vicky. And there's been times that she's like, and I'm like, no, I'm good. It's not like just, this is the only thing I want to do. But when you hold it hostage, it's almost like you own this thing and you have the permission. And it's so rarely granted. It does make a man like a little boy just like, when can we? When can I? Please? Huh? Have I been good enough? So there's just this constant conflict in the marriage. Release it. I'm like, all right. And you'll just find out there's a limit. Try it. Common causes of failure in this area. Selfishness. Unresolved guilt. I'm talking about why do some people not want to have sex? Unresolved problems, ignorance or misinformation about your mate's anatomy. There's a great book by, just flew out of my mind. Thank you. Ed Wheat, Intended for Pleasure. He's a medical doctor and a biblical counselor. We have all our couples that go through our pre-engagement buy it. Because there's a chapter on having sex in old age, a chapter on sex during pregnancy, a chapter on all kinds of issues. It's just a great handbook to have in your home for your marriage. A lot of times, people don't understand even anatomy. How is a woman aroused? I'll spare you details. But guys, we need to know this so that it's not just us having a good time and she's not. There's things we need to know about each other's body that you don't necessarily know. There it is, Intended for Pleasure. Great book to get. Ladies, if you struggle, and many times ladies do more than guys, Linda Dillo has an excellent book, Intimate Issues, that I've used with numbers of ladies who've been abused. It's got a chapter on that. Got a chapter about abortion. Got a chapter about many issues that cause women to struggle with sexuality. Great resource. Great book, Linda Dillo. Her and her husband have another book just on sex in general for couples called Intimacy Ignited. Ignorance or misinformation about how their mate is sexually aroused. I have a sexual questionnaire that I think I put in your notes. Is it in your notes? Big long thing. I use this with couples because you know what? This is one of those areas that it is awkward. And who wants to say, you know, what about me is displeasing in our sexual relationship? You know, it's just kind of, but if we're not going to make this thing better if we don't talk. So this questionnaire gets them started. I say, here, I want you to answer these questions and I want you to discuss this with each other. If you get stuck, come in and I'll help you through it. This is a good questionnaire to get them talking about some things that maybe they've never talked about before. And lastly, each spouse is to view his body as for his mate's sexual enjoyment. The goal of sexual activity is not pleasure or climax for your personal joy, but to use your body to bring gratification and satisfaction to your spouse. And when you understand that, then, and we do, Vicky and I, we're not perfect, but then there's times that Vicky's like, honey, it's fine. I'm way too tired. I hope this doesn't offend you. Say, I'm not going to come to orgasm, but I'm happy to please you. There's other times that I'm too tired, but I please her, and she's more pleased by back rubs and other stuff. And we're naked, which is fun to be together and that closeness, but there isn't the need for orgasm. Talk to each other about what is pleasing, but the goal is to please each other and to enjoy each other in this context. Lou Priolo, The Complete Husband, has some great questions in a chapter on sex for guys, things that we need to know and questions we could ask our wife that could help us. The exact statement is made about both husband and wife, indicating each has equal responsibility to initiate physical pleasure toward their mate. And what Paul is teaching specifically about the sexual relationship is simply an application of many general biblical principles. Considering the needs of others more than yourself. And finally, sexual relations are to be regular and reciprocal. Regular and reciprocal. Not once in a blue moon, not it's our anniversary, not it's your birthday. Regular. And you decide what that is. And there was a point in our marriage, we don't do it anymore, but there was so much kind of misunderstanding and disappointment. I hope this doesn't sound bad. We just said, all right, we're going to pick our days. All right, this day's counseling, I come home late. You know, this day's, we just picked three good days. We decided three. There's 7 days in a week. I'm not saying I have a Bible verse for that. But then all day long, she knew it's sex day. And I mean, like a little boy, I'd wake up, it's sex day. I mean, I kid you not, it was one of the first things that popped into my mind. I would think about it all day at work. And I say that so you ladies would just understand what a big deal this is to us. I'm 48 years old, I'm pastoring a church, and I'm waking up thinking, it's sex day. And even in the difficulties throughout the day, I'm thinking, but tonight, sex, tonight. I'm telling you, just like you think, oh, I hope we'll go for a walk. I want to have a good talk with him. I'm hungry for a good talk. Think about it. Don't deprive, don't defraud, mutual agreement.